It's so counterintuitive. Becoming pregnant and giving birth is such a joyous time for so many women, and yet many suffer from serious depression, sometimes during pregnancy, sometimes after birth. The latest numbers are staggering. Almost one in every 10 pregnant moms and new mothers go through major depressive episodes. Now the federal government is recommending that pregnant women and new mothers get screened for depression, but there's a big question: how realistic is it to expect depressed moms to go out and seek treatment? With us to talk about this difficult public health issue are Kim Vandergeese Wallace. She's a psychologist and sex therapist with the Women's Specialty Clinic at KU Med. And Kim, so good to have you here.
Thanks so much for having me.
Jane McKinney's also with us. She's a licensed social worker with the Lakewood Counseling Service. And Jane, good morning to you.
Good morning.
And this is a really good topic for sharing stories with our listeners. We're interested in hearing from you. Did you or do you know someone who suffered from depression during pregnancy or after giving birth? How did it affect your life and those around you? We'd like to hear your experiences. Our phone number, 816-235-2888. Again, 816-235-2888, or tweet us at KCUR up to date. Kim, maybe we should begin with this. Does the issue here, this issue of depression, get the attention that it deserves?
Oh, even the statistics that you mentioned, I think, underrepresent what we really see in the clinic.
Is that right?
Typically, we, on average, we're seeing more like one in five women. And that's just for the postpartum depression. But there are all kinds of psychiatric issues that often arise after a baby is born, such as anxiety, OCD, even a first bipolar episode is often common after a child is born.
So one in five, that's mm-hmm. just is staggering to me. Jane, these numbers of depressed new moms and pregnant moms, you know, they surprise me because they're just so big. If it's one in 10 or one in five, based on your experience, do those numbers sound right, or would you put them in the one in five category?
Yes, I agree with Dr. here. At Truman Medical Center's Lakewood, the rate is usually about 14.5% to 20% for perinatal mood and anxiety disorders.
And that gets you into the one in five category pretty quickly. Is that because the moms that you're seeing tend to fall into that category and you're not getting a very accurate sample there, or is that a fairly representative number?
It's representative.
Wow.
If you pool everybody that's pregnant and having a baby, that's what the rate is.
Yeah. Kim, I'm just wondering why. I mean, what's going on with a new mom that would cause her to become depressed? Again, as I said in the opening, it just seems so counterintuitive.
Mm-hmm. Well, of course, we have biological considerations. There's fairly recent research that's looking at how estrogen impacts a woman's body. And we've always known that it was part of the endocrine system and, you know, hormonal. But now we're actually finding that it acts as a neurotransmitter.
And that means what?
Well, it can affect our mood a lot.
Yeah,
So when we're pregnant, as women, our estrogen and progesterone maintain very high levels. Well, I had my second baby in 10 minutes. So within 10 minutes, all of a sudden, I plummeted. And my estrogen levels dropped to the floor, of course, impacting mood.
Yeah. How did it affect you?
I experienced a lot of irritability. I'm sure my husband would attest to. And actually, probably the most impactful thing for me was a feeling of inadequacy.
Huh.
So for the first time—
After birth, you're talking
after
about.
After birth, yes. Mm-hmm. I'm a goal-driven woman. I'm freakishly self-sufficient.
Yeah.
For the first time ever, I felt like there wasn't enough of me to go around. Like, somehow I had to figure out how to please my husband's needs and please my baby's needs, and my baby needed everything. And yeah, it was truly the first time I felt like I might fail at something.
Wow. Jane, as we sit here and talk about this, how severe can these depressions become? How debilitating can it be for some women out there?
It can be extremely debilitating. Some of the scariest things that women tell me are the thoughts they have about hurting themselves or hurting their baby, doing something on the way to work because they don't think they can handle it anymore.
Wow. And what percentage of women would you begin to put into the severe category? Is that 10% of these women or not? Or
I don't have that number.
Yeah.
The large literature reviews are showing closer to 1% that have that more severe, whether it's harm thinking of harming themselves or thinking of harming else.
And what number
else.
Again?
Closer to 1% of 1% of that 20% that we mentioned earlier.
So it's still a fairly small percentage of the overall female population here. What's your experience, Kim, in terms of what have you seen when it comes to severe issues with some women?
Mm-hmm. Well, very similar to what Jane was saying. We do start to see people who have suicidal ideation. The very bad moments are when we end up with a psychotic break, because once we disconnect from reality, behavior becomes very unpredictable. Where that break takes us is extremely unpredictable.
So you begin to wonder very quickly, Jane, so what's the impact on the baby when so many moms are experiencing this level of depression? How does it affect the baby?
The effects can be long-lasting and over a lifetime and quite injurious to the child development, affecting the child's ability to bond or attach with mom, their whole relationship, the whole family's relationship. And then later, children are at higher risk for psychiatric problems and school problems.
So in a nutshell, this can be pretty serious stuff.
Right.
Wow. Okay. How difficult is it, Kim, for the spouse to spot this depression when it begins to creep up? In some cases, is it tough?
Well, I mean, sometimes it can be very obvious, but sure. The spouse is also, or the partner is also going through their own very critical life change. And sometimes that can be so consuming. Figuring out who you are as a co-parent, I mean, that's a shift in identity. And sometimes you can miss some of the cues that are happening around you because of that.
We're talking about depression with new moms, with pregnant mothers. We're looking for your experiences out there. 816-235-2888 is our phone number here. Let's go to Jennifer from Prairie Village. And Jennifer, welcome to Up to Date. So nice to have you.
Hi.
Hi. I
had a question. I had always had a tendency to be a little on the depressed side. And then that took a deep turn with first miscarriage. And after that, I went on to some DHA supplements, and then I never was depressed again after that. I didn't have trouble with each of my kids. And I wondered if that is something that helps people, or if you feel like that's a factor.
I can address that
if you don't mind, Jane. Yeah.
And what we know in the research is that we see a statistically significant shift in mood when women take 1,000 milligrams of fish oil supplements a day. During pregnancy, they'll often bump that number up to 3,000 to 6,000. And then we do get those protective factors. And it's not only good for mood, it's also good for the baby's development. So it's kind of a win-win.
I wasn't aware that fish oil was good for mood.
Yeah, there's actually quite a bit of literature that supports it. So often if people will have a really hard time with side effects of your more traditional SSRIs, for example, that might be a really nice alternative.
Jane, are you recommending fish oil in the work you do?
I have not.
Yeah, okay.
As a social worker, I...
That doesn't really quite even... Okay, yeah.
My interventions are more psychosocial.
All right. Let's go to Suzanne from Prairie Village. Suzanne, you're on Up to Date. Good morning.
Good morning.
Go ahead.
Well, my question was, you've been discussing a lot of statistics, but do the statistics take into consideration various other variables like economic situations, stress situations? Could it be that the family has maybe lost their job, or there's going to be other stressors just other than hormonal that could contribute to that?
Yeah, interesting.
Mm-hmm. Well, let me just share with you a list of interpersonal risk factors that we haven't addressed yet, and that might be helpful. If somebody is kind of prone to have a negative outlook on the world, prior to even becoming pregnant or starting to try to get pregnant, that can influence the outcome of postpartum depression. If there is a family history of mood disorders, anxiety, bipolar disorders, then that puts somebody at risk. If someone has an external locus of control, so they really live in a world where they need someone else's approval, then, good luck having a newborn.
Yeah.
That can be a really tough position. If we have perfectionistic tendencies prior to pregnancy, that can influence us. If we're very task-oriented, if we have a low self-esteem, if we have a history of physical, sexual, emotional abuse,
So to answer Suzanne's question, the answer is yes. There are lots of factors might be playing into
Absolutely.
This.
Absolutely. It's a really dynamic situation.
Jane?
Do you think there's an age element is that of that as well. So, say younger moms who may not have as much life experience as an older mom may have different stressors than somebody who would have had their children in their late 30s or 40s.
Actually, we see the opposite in the literature. What we see is that women who are more highly educated and are older when they become parents are more prone to having postpartum depression.
That's interesting.
Yeah, and the theory we think might be contributing to that is that an older woman already has her career and her sense of identity, and she knows who she is. And then that gets tossed on upside down. And so it's a little different adjustment. It makes sense to me that a younger mom would struggle. And that's where I would have gone with it initially in my own head until I really started looking at the literature on it. And sure enough, there's a lot of literature that kind of unintuitively supports the opposite.
Jane, hop in here.
And there isn't any picture of the woman who's going to develop a postpartum mood or anxiety disorder. They can be of higher or lower socioeconomic status. They could have a job or be a student or not work at all.
Mm-hmm.
But the woman on the phone is right that the factors of the psychosocial stressors, whether or not they have financial stability, social support systems, good partnerships, those all do play a role in whether or not a woman would or is at higher risk for developing a perinatal mood or anxiety disorder.
I hope that helps, Suzanne.
That was very informative. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. You know, I thought, you know, at least a long time ago, there was this idea that I'm wondering how long ago the idea of postpartum depression was recognized by the medical profession, because for a long time, Jane, wasn't all this stuff just sort of brushed off as not that big of a deal?
Right. And even recently, it's go home and get more sleep, have a glass of wine at night, you know, and not really looking at all the factors underlying what's really happening with the woman.
To what extent do you think that's changing? The medical profession is getting on top of this a little bit more as the whole country begins to grapple and recognize the potential severity of mental health in our population.
I think it's changing very quickly.
Mm.
Maybe not quickly enough for the people who are suffering.
Yeah. If you could wave a magic wand, you'd make it go even faster, it sounds like.
Right.
Yeah. Back to some calls here. Let's go to Jane from Topeka. Jane, good morning. You're on Up to Date. We're talking about depression among new moms and pregnant mothers. Nice to have you.
Thank you very much. It's been very interesting so far.
Good. Go ahead, Jane.
Yes. I was a very ambitious person. I had graduated from the University of California. I got a good job in New York. I was married. Then he got a job where he would be traveling to Saudi Arabia and actually all over the world. And this was the time when I had my first child at age 30. So I find myself all alone, no relatives, in the snow. I've never seen so much snow. This is upstate New York. I literally couldn't get out of bed. I couldn't move. I would cry every time the baby cried. Now, I was a very independent person, voted most likely to succeed in my class. And here I was, I could barely get up. Not only that, I got OCD, where everything had to be perfect before I got outside. And then I was afraid to go outside. It was horrible. It finally got so bad that my father intervened and asked several doctors, and they recommend the Menninger Foundation. Now, this is after a year of horror. That's all I can say. And I came here. I'd never even heard of an antidepressant. And I became normal again after about a year and got my master's degree at KU finally. I got a master's degree, got a great job. I'm very successful in my community. I won't say what I do, but people always say I'm normal, and I have to laugh. I have to laugh if they saw me back then, because my son actually turned out very well, has a very good job.
Yeah.
But I was able to bond with him somehow. He actually, my husband divorced me and actually took away my child, and I didn't get to live with him. But I bonded with him somehow, and he decided to live with me. here in Kansas.
Well, Jane, I really appreciate you sharing that story. And Dr. Kim Vandegeest Wallace with the Women's Specialty Center over at KU Med, how unusual is that story? What a breathtaking story.
Well, first of all, thank you for sharing
that.
Yeah,
absolutely.
I really appreciate your willingness to come on and share so much of yourself today. The story is not particularly unusual. So only about 30%
of couples... Most likely to succeed, though, Kim.
Yeah. So only about 30% of couples actually report that they are happier after having a baby. The first year of a child's life...
30% of couples report they're happier.
Yes.
70% saying...
70% saying it sucks a little bit. It's really hard.
Wow.
So 70%...
We don't think about having babies in that context very often. All we think about it is happiness and good times.
Now, if you look at John Gottman's work, who is a very famous researcher looking at couples and how they're relating to one another, 70% report decreased satisfaction the first year of a child's life. There's some research that says that it's more difficult to have a child that first year than to get divorced or be unemployed.
Wow.
And let me just note, since I'm a sex therapist, that people report decreased satisfaction in their sex life for the first 5 years of a baby's life.
Wow.
Five. They got to get to kindergarten before that gets back on track.
So we're taking the birth rate in this metropolitan community right now and driving it downward as we talk right now here, I think. That's for sure. I'm really glad we had that good phone call there. Let's go back to some more calls here and go to Amanda from Kansas City, Missouri. Amanda, you're on Up to Date.
Hi. Thank you so much for taking my call.
Sure.
It sounds like the last few callers have brought up something that really should be touched on and focused on a lot more. In fact, it should be the main focus. After having a baby, particularly, it seems like there's just not enough support for moms out there.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm a member of several different mom groups online, and that's the biggest thing. It leads to fighting and resentment between husbands and wives. And you're so isolated, especially the first few months. It actually resulted in my divorce. I already have a pre-existing depression, and I bottomed out. And when my son was a month old, I think my husband just emotionally checked out, and he ended up leaving 7 months later and taking the baby for 3 months. And it sort of made me a bigger advocate for support.
Jane, that's a really good phone call again, and maybe that leads us into sort of the point of this conversation in terms of the timeliness news factor that's going on here, which are these new recommendations from the U.S. Preventive Services Task Force, which issued this week this call for pregnant women and new moms to receive depression screening. Jane, what do you make of what's been suggested here? Do the recommendations go far enough? Has the task force done its job here as far as you're concerned?
I think they've done a great job in making that recommendation universal for pregnant women and postpartum women. They did not say how often those screenings should happen. Some of the literature does show that if you do it every trimester, because these are snapshots in time, and also you'll get a better result. There is no harm in screening, or they pointed out there's no harm in screening, so it is an essential tool.
Are there enough social workers, enough counselors and psychologists out there to handle all these moms?
I think that's a good question.
And what do you do if you live out in rural Kansas, rural Missouri?
It's much more difficult to get behavioral health care in rural areas. It's hard enough in the suburban areas to find adequate behavioral health services.
And the other factor that's interesting to me here, Kim, is this idea of how realistic is it to expect, you know, a depressed mom to go out and seek treatment here? Because you read that a lot of times depressed folks don't want to go out and get off the couch and go get help for anything.
Oh, depression can be physically exhausting.
Of course.
And I do think it goes back to this myth that we're supposed to be happy and we're supposed to fall so deeply in love with this baby immediately. And when we don't do that, we feel like we're failing. And who moves towards failure? Who wants to share that with another person, even in the privacy of a psychologist's office?
Mm-hmm.
It's embarrassing and shameful is how we hold on to it. So we can screen a lot. We could screen, you know, every 2 weeks if we wanted to. But I'm afraid we won't really see shifts until we as a society understand this is a normal process and we make room for the normalcy and we make room for this giant life adjustment and say it's okay.
And as Jane was saying before, we're not even at that point yet.
No, not even close.
And that's a scary proposition right there.
Well, and there's 6 billion people. Like, there have been a lot of women who've experienced this. And we're still far away.
So your point, maybe like Jane's, Kim, is that these are good recommendations, terrific to have them, but it's only a starting point here, it sounds like.
Right. Until we make that cultural shift and that mind shift, I'm afraid we're a little bit stuck.
Yeah. Steve wrote to ask us this. What about taking depressants while breastfeeding? Advised or not?
I'm not a psychiatrist, so yeah. I can't make any recommendations regarding medication.
Yeah. Kim?
I'm a psychologist, so I don't do medication either, but I can tell you what the research says. And
yes.
I did talk to some of the physicians before I came on to see where they were at with it. So what the research shows us is that when they screen the baby to see how much antidepressant they're actually getting in their system, they only get, if a mother takes it for 365 days, the baby only has as much as she takes for 2 days. So
wow.
365ths is what the baby actually is getting into their system.
And that's a fairly safe level?
Well, so right now our research extends up until grade school year. So I've done some longitudinal studies, and we know up until grade school that we see that the babies are doing and the kids are developing without cognitive, emotional, mental deficits. And all the physicians that I spoke to yesterday said, Kim, what is more dangerous, for the mother to have this severe depression or for the baby to have these tiny traces of serotonin reuptake inhibitor? And so that's often where the conversation goes in the clinic.
Erica tweeted us this at KCUR, up to date, adoptive moms struggle from depression too.
Excellent point.
Interesting thought. Kiki tweeted this, how does exercise during and after pregnancy affect postpartum depression?
Well, we know that exercise can be a protective factor.
Mm-hmm.
It's a great biological intervention. We do run into problems, though, because exercise can be difficult. If a woman's on bed rest, for example,
yeah.
you know, after having a baby, we don't want to go for a, you know, marathon run the day after that happens.
Yeah, right?
We have to let our bodies heal. So sometimes we get in this stuck place. The thing that can be really protective and supportive and help us recover, we can't really access for a while.
You know, Jean McKinney, at the Lakewood Hospital where you work, you're already working on a grant-based program that provides depression screening for pregnant moms and those who have just delivered. Tell us a little bit more about what you're doing and how effective you think it is.
Well, we had we're wrapping up the Perinatal Community Initiative grant that's funded in part by Greater Kansas City Healthcare Foundation.
Yeah.
And what we did was, you know, used evidence-based screening, the EPDS tool, to screen women for potential perinatal mood and anxiety disorders, and
right.
then provide prescriptive referrals, connecting them with community resources. And we also worked, and also referring to behavioral health for treatment. And the women who participate feel better when they get their psychosocial interventions. They learn how to wear a baby wrap. They learn about activities they can do with their infant that encourage bonding, and they feel better.
How does what you're doing compare to these new guidelines? Are they in sync pretty much, it sounds like,
it
to me?
It seems like it.
Yeah, yeah. And as you screen these women, are you finding that the 1 in 10 rate is still holding true, or what are you finding there?
Well, the women that we're addressing have some kind of mental health diagnosis.
So it
helps with their management of their symptoms.
Okay. Let's go back to some calls here. And Joe from Lenexa. Joe, you're on Up to Date. We're talking about depression among new moms and pregnant moms. Good morning.
Good morning. How is everybody?
Everybody's good, Joe. Thanks.
Awesome. Well, I know this was briefly brought up, but I am adopted, and one day I look forward to adopting, and I was wondering if there's any research that shows how adoption might affect postpartum depression, if it actually ends up increasing the severity of the depression, not having the child, or if it ends up decreasing due to the fact that there is no child. I just am wondering on the facts there.
Yeah, great question. Adoptive moms, what do we know?
I can only say just from an experiential or practice point of view, that with a adoptive, when you split a child from their parent, that's a disruption. So if you look at the stress of going through pregnancy and giving birth and then not having your baby, that's a huge loss, regardless of the reason. Mm-hmm. And it's a huge loss for the baby as well, even if the baby is going to a family that loves them and can take care of them and meet their needs the rest of their life. Hmm. So there is a disruption, and that disruption has to heal.
A price gets paid, you're saying.
It may be temporary, mm-hmm. or it may be long-lasting, depending on the intervention.
Yeah. Joe, does that help?
Yeah, I just want to say thank you all, and thank you to all the mothers out there. I know that I'm blessed to know my birth mother now, and it's just kind of been just lovely what all you all do.
Right.
So, thank you.
I'm glad you called, Joe. Thank you. Let's go to Chris from Kansas City, Missouri. Chris, nice to have you. Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm calling with a comment slash question for your guest.
Yes.
I'm wondering, my wife is from Europe. I'm from here in Kansas City. And we're at the age where a lot of our friends and family, both here in America and in Europe, are having kids. So we feel like we're around. We currently don't have any children, but we feel like there's such a drastic difference between the way American moms handle and perceive motherhood from those who are in Europe.
Hmm.
So I'm wondering, if you guys have seen any research or have any comments along those lines.
Moms from different cultures and maybe what the differences are. Any thoughts there? Yeah.
Yes. So there is, from a sex therapy perspective, there's actually a lot of research on how we parent differently regarding sexuality. And we in America tend to be far more negative and rigid around our parenting styles. For example, in Sweden, if your preschooler comes home and says, "Mommy, I'm in love with Joey," mommy in Sweden says, "Oh, what amazing feelings. That's so exciting." Mommy in America says, "You don't know what you're talking about, and you don't know what love is yet, and you're too little for that." And so you sense
funny.
That rigidity around that. And that doesn't start when the kiddo's in preschool and has their first crush. I mean, mm-hmm. we see that earlier on. We have different expectations, and I don't know that our expectations are always realistic, and maybe creates a little more vulnerability here.
Oh, that's really interesting. Okay, please go to one more phone call. That's a really good call. I'm glad to have it. Let's go to Sharon from Kansas City, Missouri. Sharon, good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
Well, thank you.
I was telling the producer that, and I'm so excited about hearing about the screening for depression. My daughter had a little boy almost 2 years ago, and she was living in the D.C. area, and so I came and stayed with her for the first, 3 weeks of her baby. And she had this expectation of what motherhood was going to be like, and it wasn't. And she was exhausted, and he didn't sleep, and so she went into this major depression and postpartum depression. I tried to get her to understand what she was going on, but all she could see is if she admitted that, then she failed at motherhood. And finally got her to see a therapist, and the therapist, because she wasn't sleeping, she was exhausted, and the therapist told her, you need to get more sleep. And when she came home and told me that, I said, "You've got to be kidding me." She said, and I said, "Well, go to a different therapist." She goes, "I'm not going to go to any more therapists." So it didn't, I guess about couple months ago, she said to me, "Wow, I was really in a postpartum depression." She realized it. And I said, "Well, next time when you have this baby, you need to be aware of that and, help yourself."
Yeah.
It was really sad that she couldn't enjoy the first 9 months of the child's life because she was so upset with herself and she couldn't bond with him because she was so exhausted that she thought that she didn't love her child.
Well, I appreciate that story, too. We're going to have to leave our conversation there. I want to thank our guests here today and all our good callers here with all these good stories that begin to indicate what a big problem we have here. Kim Vandegeest Wallace, a psychologist and sex therapist with the Women's Specialty Clinic at KU Med, and Jay McKinney, a licensed social worker with the Lakewood Counseling Service. Thank you both for the very good conversation. I appreciate it.
Thank you.